Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Paying the Organization.
Hello. Illegal immigration is a huge and growing problem for this country. So is legal immigration, to the extent that the immigrants are nearly all members of minority groups these days. Immigration is changing the complexion and the character of America. We are becoming less European and more Middle Eastern, Asian, African, and mestizo. I've spoken on earlier programs about what this non-white immigration is doing to our schools and our cities and our tax burden. Let's look today at some of the other costs involved. You know, back before the Second World War, we had immigration laws which ensured that most immigrants to the United States were Europeans. It was extremely difficult for Asians or Africans or other non-whites to enter the country. Then in the rush of feel-good egalitarianism and Yankee Doodle democracy, which were promoted by the media after the war, the members of the liberal elite let themselves be persuaded by the media bosses that our immigration policies were racist. What we needed in America was more diversity, they decided. A Jewish congressman from New York, Emanuel Seller, headed the drive in the Congress for a new immigration law which would favor the Third World instead of Europe. And in 1965, such a law was passed with the co-sponsorship of Massachusetts Senator Edward Kennedy. Of course, at the time, the Jews and the liberals were campaigning for their new immigration law. They didn't advertise it as a law which would change America's complexion. They didn't talk of it as a diversity-enhancing law. Quite the opposite, in fact, because in 1965, the masters of the controlled media hadn't had time yet to make diversity fashionable among ordinary Americans. Television was still relatively new and hadn't worked its magic yet. People who wanted to maintain America's European racial character foresaw the effect the new law would have and argued against it on that basis. But its proponents deceitfully claimed that it wouldn't change America's racial character at all, knowing full well that it would. And so the law was passed. And since it went into effect in 1965, most of the legal immigrants to the United States have been non-European, non-white. So have nearly all of the illegal immigrants. And America's racial complexion has changed drastically as a result. In the last census taken before Emanuel Seller's new immigration law, the census of 1960, the population of the United States was 89% white. In the 1990 census, after 25 years with the new law, the white percentage of the population had fallen to 76%. Actually, the situation was worse than that because illegal immigrants, nearly all of whom are non-white, tend to avoid the census takers. And the percentage of whites in the United States has continued to plunge since 1990. Today, the country is somewhere between 70 and 75% white. Occasionally, Congress has made special modifications to the 1965 immigration law to admit favored groups of immigrants. The largest such group is from Europe, but actually is not racially European. It consists of Jews from the former Soviet Union claiming refugee status. A Jewish legislator, New Jersey's Senator Frank Lautenberg, succeeded in 1989 in having Soviet Jews officially designated as a persecuted minority in the Soviet Union, and therefore eligible for admission to the United States without regard to regular immigration quotas. As a matter of fact, Jews in the Soviet Union, far from being persecuted, have been a favored race ever since the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, a revolution which they, in large part, engineered. While communism ruled in Russia, Jews were far more often persecutors of Russians than the other way around. But in 1989, with Russia bled dry and communism on the brink of collapse, Soviet Jews decided to find a new host. And so for the past 9 years, whereas it has been nearly impossible for a real Russian or Ukrainian to become a U.S. immigrant, Jews from the former Soviet Union have been pouring into the United States at a rate of about 50,000 a year. Furthermore, as refugees from persecution, Soviet Jews are given a cash handout from the U.S. Treasury and various other federal subsidies as soon as they arrive. Whenever anyone has dared to question why Soviet Jews continue to be exempt from the immigration laws which apply to everyone else, he is likely to be charged with anti-Semitism. And the claim will be made that these Soviet Jews are a very clever and skillful bunch of people who contribute greatly to America's economy, and we're fortunate to have them in the country. Not really. They are clever, all right, but the only economy they contribute to is their own, and it's at the expense of the rest of us. Soviet Jewish immigrants in the United States have been a far larger per capita burden on white Americans than any other immigrant group. A substantial part of this burden is due to the fact that a great many of these Soviet Jews are gangsters, members of a global organized crime network, which they call the Organizatsiya, the organization. Under communism, Jews controlled organized crime in the Soviet Union. And when communism collapsed at the beginning of this decade, Soviet Jewish gangsters not only branched out into various new money-making enterprises in Russia and Ukraine, including the white slave trade, they also began building their criminal operations in the United States and in Western Europe. They virtually control organized crime in Germany, Poland, and several other European countries today. And the Organizatsiya has replaced the Italian and Sicilian mafia as the principal organized crime element in the United States. And these Jews from the former Soviet Union are far more predatory than the mafia ever was. They suck far more blood from law-abiding Americans. 3 or 4 years ago, they made the headlines with their gasoline tax rackets in New Jersey and New York, where a handful of Jewish gangsters from Russia were stealing an estimated $1.5 billion a year from these two states alone. More recently, they've come into the news in connection with automobile insurance fraud in California. They hire people, hundreds of people every week, to participate in staged automobile accidents, and then, using their own lawyers and their own clinics for treating the alleged injuries in the accidents, they collect from the insurance companies. Now, anyone can do this sort of thing, and as a matter of fact, Chinese, Vietnamese, and Mexican gangs had been engaging in automobile insurance fraud before the Organizatsiya became involved, just as the mafia had been stealing gasoline taxes in New York and New Jersey before the Soviet Jews made a multi-billion dollar racket out of it. When the Jews moved into insurance fraud recently, however, they did so on a massive scale, converting what had been a minor irritation to a huge drain on the pocketbook of nearly every American. Automobile insurance fraud is currently sucking nearly $20 billion a year from the American economy and is costing the average American household an estimated $300 per year in additional insurance payments. Because, of course, every dollar paid to a Jewish gangster as a result of a fraudulent automobile accident comes from the pockets of all of the people who are obliged to buy automobile insurance. This is an enormous racket, and it dwarfs anything that the mafia used to do. And gasoline tax fraud and automobile insurance fraud are by no means the only rackets that Soviet Jewish immigrants have moved into. In New York, Los Angeles, and other port cities, their presence has substantially increased the likelihood that your car will be stolen, for example. They control gangs of thieves who steal expensive cars off the street, and then the Jews arrange for the cars to be shipped in freight containers to other Jewish gangsters in the Middle East, where they can be sold for much higher prices than in the United States and where they will never be recovered by the police. As with the other rackets, the Jews aren't the only organized criminals who steal cars, but they do it on such a large scale that they run insurance rates up much higher than all of the non-Jewish auto thieves together. There are perhaps 400,000 recent Soviet Jewish immigrants in the United States, most of them in the New York and Los Angeles areas, and only about 4,000 of these Jews belong to organized crime gangs, or about 1%. But the infrastructure for these Jewish gangs is the entire Soviet Jewish community. They could not function without all of the other Jews who make up the community within which they live. Don't let yourself be misled by the argument that 99% of Soviet Jewish immigrants to the United States are not gangsters. The bottom line is that these Soviet Jewish immigrants, gangsters or not, are draining about $50,000 per capita per year from the American economy as a result of Jewish organized crime activities in the United States. It may be only 1% of them who are actively engaged in the rackets, but we wouldn't have Jewish organized crime gangs in the United States sucking money from all of us if we didn't have Soviet Jews in the United States. And we wouldn't have Soviet Jews in the United States if we had a sane immigration policy. The United States is still nearly three-quarters white, but most of the crime in the United States is committed by non-whites. In some cases, we may overlook this non-white crime because it doesn't impact on us directly. For example, I have a news story in front of me now about a Mexican gang which operates a sex slave racket in the southeastern United States. The gang members force Mexican girls, some as young as 14, to work as prostitutes in a chain of brothels they own in Florida and South Carolina, which cater mostly to illegal Mexican aliens doing farm work in this country. This may be dismissed as a case of non-whites committing crimes against non-whites, which doesn't cost us anything. But as long as it is happening on our turf, we should be concerned about it. If we permit non-white moralities, non-white attitudes toward women, non-white concepts of propriety and proper behavior to flourish here, they eventually will take root here and will infect white Americans, just the way black lifestyles began influencing young whites after our schools were racially integrated. We cannot have growing communities of Chinese, of Vietnamese, of Haitians, of Mexicans, of Soviet Jews, and of 100 other alien races springing up all across the United States, taking over our cities, spreading into our suburbs, and still have any realistic hope of maintaining white values and a white morality as the basis of our own community life. The poison eventually will infect us, sicken us, destroy us. This is in no case more true than with the Soviet Jewish gangs which have established themselves here during the past decade. When the Organisatsiya decides to move into an area of criminal activity, whether it be gasoline tax fraud or insurance fraud or exporting stolen cars, they do it efficiently and in an organized way which dwarfs the activity of other criminal gangs and typically brings them billions of dollars in loot and makes it possible for them to engage in bribery and political corruption on a massive scale. Bill Clinton accepts political donations from them, and you can be certain that police chiefs, mayors, and other politicians and public officials do too. No government, even one which initially is honest, can remain uncorrupted by the sort of money these organized Jewish criminals have at their disposal. And of course, the controlled media cover for them. When occasionally the newspapers are forced to report on some Organisatsiya racket, the criminals are never referred to as Jews. Instead, they are called Russians. The media customarily refer to the Organisatsiya as the Russian Mafia. One other reason why the activities of the Organisatsiya ought to be of special concern to us is that we are their chosen victims. Mexican gangs often confine their activities to their own people, as in the case of the sex slave gang I mentioned. Vietnamese and Chinese gangs also tend to focus on extortion and other rackets which victimize their own people. Of course, when these non-white immigrant gangs engage in the drug business, many white Americans end up as victims. But the Jewish gangs deliberately choose us as their victims from the beginning. Part of the reason is that they want money on a much bigger scale than they can extract from their fellow immigrants. They're not interested in a paltry few million dollars. They want and they get billions. And it's from the American majority they get it, whether they're fleecing the stock market a la Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky, or running our auto insurance premiums up through organized fraud. And part of the reason they choose white Americans as their victims is that they believe they have a God-given right to plunder us. Whenever they immigrate into a non-Jewish country, whether it is ancient Egypt 3,500 years ago or America today, their imperative is the same. Ye shall eat the fat of the land, their Torah commands them. Thou shalt suck the milk of the Gentiles. You know, it is a difficult thing, a painful thing, for most Americans to face this problem of non-European immigration into America. Most Americans want to be nice. They want to be polite. They don't want to give offense. And because of this inherent politeness we have, we let ourselves be buffaloed by those clamoring for more diversity. If there's one thing America doesn't need, one thing which is pure poison to America, it's more diversity. But the Jews of Hollywood and Madison Avenue have done a very effective job of selling the notion to an impressionable and easily manipulated public that it's nicer and more tolerant and more open-minded and fairer to be in favor of letting non-Europeans, including Soviet Jews, continue pouring into America. A great many of us understand that we don't want any more non-whites or any more Jews in America. In fact, we don't want the ones that already are here. But we feel an enormous pressure to smile, to be nice, and not to object to what is happening to our country. We are afraid to stand up against the propaganda of Jewish television and Jewish magazine advertisements and Jewish films. Propaganda that tells us more diversity is good for us, even when we know that it isn't. Their propaganda, their pressure, is pervasive. It is everywhere. I just finished viewing a Jewish film about the history of the Hollywood film industry. The name of the film is Hollywoodism. It openly discusses what everyone knew but was afraid to speak of openly for fear of being denounced as an anti-Semite, namely, that Hollywood and the motion picture industry are almost completely Jewish. The film talks about the Jews who came to America from Russia and other areas of Eastern Europe early in this century and took over the fledgling motion picture industry in Hollywood, elbowing most of the non-Jews out. The film claims that these immigrant Jews reinvented America for us. They cooked up an image of what they wanted America to be like, more diverse, more democratic and proletarian, more vulgar, with lots of black music and other elements of black culture mixed into our culture. And then they sold that image to the American people, first through cinemas and later through television. They persuaded white Americans that this Jewish image of America was a better image than our own. The Jews boast of this transformation of America they made through their control of the motion picture and television industries. If you haven't seen this film, you can still read the book it is based on. The book is Neil Gabler's An Empire of Their Own, How the Jews Invented Hollywood. And it is available from National Vanguard Books, the sponsor of this program. As I said, it is very difficult for the average American to stand up against this flood of Jewish propaganda, which clamors for ever more diversity and intimidates most of those who would like to stop the flow of Haitians and Chinese and Vietnamese and Soviet Jews into America. As long as white Americans still have the option of moving to a whiter neighborhood or sending their children to a whiter school, they'll choose that option rather than make a fuss and be considered rude by speaking out against the insane immigration policies of the government in Washington. It's too bad we're that way. It just means that our future will be much bloodier and more painful than necessary. Meanwhile, it will be good for us to remember every time we pay our automobile insurance that one consequence of non-white immigration into America is the size of our premiums. It will be good to remember that a third of every premium pays just for insurance fraud, and that virtually all automobile insurance fraud is perpetrated by gangs of non-white immigrants, a growing number of whom belong to the organizacia. If you are paying, say, $800 a year in automobile insurance, then between $250 and $300 of your hard-earned money is going directly into the pockets of grinning Soviet Jewish gangsters, courtesy of the U.S. Congress. Think about it, sucker, and thanks for being with me again today.